The Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the Boston Marathon's Adaptive Program for Runners, creating opportunities for runners with autism and other disabilities to participate in the legendary Boston Marathon.
Hi, my name is Mike Palmer, and I'm running as a member of the Adaptive Program for Runners in this year's Boston Marathon. Thanks to the Flutie Foundation, runners like me can achieve their dreams and finish the greatest race in the world.
The Flutie Foundation promotes inclusion for all to help everyone achieve their running dreams in Boston and beyond. Visit FlutieFoundation.org to get involved.
B-Pod Studios.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes. Twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bays. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town things. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
If you only knew. I often say the best stuff is off the air because it's not FCC compliant, Chris. From the Town Fair Tire Studio, it is Gasper Murray here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. An abbreviated show this morning and afternoon. We're only on for a couple of hours instead of our normal three. And to that, I will say something I don't say very often, if ever at all. Thank you very much, New England Revolution, who have a match coming up at 1 with Montreal, I think. Either way.
That would be correct, John.
Hey, all right, yes. I got it right.
The Impact.
The Impact, I was going to say. The old Impact.
Go Revs.
Got to get out of that Eastern Conference basement here.
Only out on for a couple of hours today. Good morning, Chris. Hi.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. You're fresh from the availability for the media, talking to Don Sweeney.
Don Sweeney, yes.
He, the architect, the GM, if you will, of the now Stanley Cup final-bound Boston Bruins, who completed the sweep, thankfully, of the mostly useless Carolina Hurricanes. Thank you for eradicating some of the more difficult teams like the Washington Capitals en route to the Eastern Conference Finals. But boy, what an almost complete waste of time that series was. And thankfully so, because I think that the Bruins need rest. Did you learn anything? Did he say anything interesting, or was that just kind of a big waste of time?
No, he was pretty interesting. You know, he was sort of, I think, reflecting on how the team got to this point, but really I think the upshot was, you know, he feels pretty good about Chara for game one. He was saying that it's the injury is something that's been nagging him. He said it seems like Kevin Miller and Chris Wagner are not likely to play in the Stanley Cup final, so he mentioned that as well. They don't seem super concerned about the layoff, but then again, there's nothing they can really do about it. So I mean I think that's one of the big questions moving forward for the Bruins. Is Tuukka Rask is playing as well as he's ever played? He's incredibly sharp. It's great to get the physical rest, but how will he respond to this type of layoff? What if he loses his edge? Then I think it's a completely different scenario for the Bruins, because even as Bruce Cassidy said, you know, they've ridden very good goaltending, that top line and secondary scoring to get to this point.
Yeah, I'm not really worried about him, believe it or not. My perspective has changed so much on Rask just in this run. That I don't think it can go back to where it was, where I kind of always expected the worst, or him to, you know, almost like tap out, you know, as it has happened before. I mean, remember, was it now 3 years ago in that final game of the season that they needed to win
against Ottawa?
Yeah, against Ottawa. And all of a sudden you hear about stomach pains, he can't put a cork in it, and he's not playing the game. It's like, what? Huh? And so there's been other times too where it's just been like, oh boy, like you hear that he's, you know, the talk that he's overpaid, that he's overrated, that they should trade him. And I never really got that drastic, if I recall, but I don't know if I really trusted him all that much. This is a perspective changing run for me with Rask, so much so that one of the things I kind of disagree with that people have kind of talked about here since they wrapped this thing up on Thursday night is that, well, that he could go backwards if they don't win the cup. Just as simple as that. If the Bruins don't win the cup, well, that's still going to fall on Rask,
But Jim, that's right, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we've been through this, and this is the funny thing. How many years have we talked about? He played this way in 2013.
Yeah,
but
he wasn't this good.
So the numbers are slightly better now, but the save percentage was over .940. He was that good, but all anybody remembers is game six. So if they don't win, I think it's going to be the same thing. I hear what you're saying. I'd like to believe that you're right, and that's the way it should be. But he played this way 6 years ago, and all anybody remembers is the Stanley Cup final in game six, and he still has to answer all the same questions. So if they don't win, I think he's right back where he started.
But he wasn't good in that first series against Toronto, where it was take that, Reimer, you bum, and he wasn't that great in the finals. He was excellent. He was like this against Pittsburgh, I'll give you that, and even in that Rangers series. But this sustained run, he has been like the best I've ever seen. I would put what he's doing now is Tim Thomas like in 2011. It's John Van Beesbrook, for those that remember, with the Florida Panthers in 95.
Yeah.
It's
with the rats. Throw the rats on the ice.
J.S. Shiger with the Ducks in 2003, and I want to get back to him in a moment. It's like what Dominic Hasek did in 99. It's that level of play that it's like that first period in Game 3. So there were two mostly entertaining games in this mostly useless series. That's 1 and 3. That first period where they played in Raleigh, the Bruins couldn't even get it out of their own end for that entire period, and Rask was as good as any of those goalies I just mentioned. Like that was the real perspective changer for me in this. So John Sebastian Shiger, those that aren't super hockey fans, if you don't, in 2003, the Ducks lose to that the mind-numbing Devils teams for the early aughts, the neutral zone trap teams that just ruined hockey for a time.
Martin Brodeur and net.
He helped get that Ducks team to the finals, and he still ends up winning the Conn Smythe. He's one of, like, five players that have won the Conn Smythe on the losing team. The other goalie, Ron Hextall, because I'm kind of old enough to remember that, with the Flyers in 87.
Oh, when they lost to the Oilers.
Edmonton, the stacked Oilers teams with Gretzky and everybody else, Messier and all those guys. Those guys ended up winning the MVP of the series that they lost, because it's the entirety of the playoffs.
Yeah.
So if the Bruins get to, they're in the final, and they lose to either the Sharks or the Blues, and it's because, you know, the perfection line goes sideways or whatever. The forwards just are rusty, and they're not putting the puck in the net. But Rask is still playing at the level he's at, and he wins the Conn Smythe. Well, you can't get on him for that. That's where it's going to be a little bit unfair. And I'm usually not in the position to defend guys because I'm, you know, but if he ends up, if it's that type of level of play that you've seen here sustained, and they go to the final here, they lose to either the Sharks or the Blues. It's six or seven games, even five. But it's just that they have the inability to score, and the opposite goaltender is just as good, especially if it's Binnington, who I think could potentially be a problem with St. Louis. But Rask wins it. You can't. It's not going to be his fault. So I think that's going to be unfair if it does play out like that, and people are still like, well, Rask wasn't good enough. No, if he's good enough, you can't blame him. There's other factors here.
I think it's about this series, though, and some of the – look, he's gotten to this point before, and it's about playing at this level in this series. And the thing is – if they lose the series, he's not going to win the Conn Smythe. If they lose to St. Louis, it will be Binnington, who's right behind him in a lot of these numbers here and who's played really well. I think Binnington would probably, or Patrick Maroon. Or if it's the Sharks, it's probably going to be Logan Couture who will win it. So if they lose the series, I don't think he's going to win the Conn Smythe.
Really?
No, I don't, because I think Bennington's been really good, and Logan Couture's been really good. So I think one of those guys would end up getting it. I don't think it's an automatic. Now, maybe he plays like exceptionally well. Let's say they play the Sharks, who have a lot of high-end talent there, and it's a six- or seven-game series, and he plays really well in that series, and they lose. Okay, maybe he still does win it, but I don't think it's a sure thing to say he's going to win it if they lose the Stanley Cup final, because I think there are other players on those other teams that have pretty strong cases as well. And I also think, too, the other thing is, one, with Tim Thomas's run, go back and look at that. I mean, that was a tremendous run. He wasn't that great in the first round against Montreal.
No, I know.
He wasn't.
And he had dud games against Tampa.
Yeah, I mean, he was fantastic, you know, at the end against Tampa, obviously. And even Rask, I would say, he wasn't bad against Toronto, but he wasn't like this. I mean, it wasn't really to me until they got down 2-1 against Columbus that he started playing like this. So
no, we're so far removed from it, you forget some of the bad.
Yeah.
We totally do.
So what I'm saying is, like, I don't think that this is all that different from 20. Like, you're saying he wasn't great in the first round in 2013. You're right. But he wasn't this in the first round in 2019 either. And so my point is, a lot of it is right now we're living in him being dominant. And if it ends the way it ended in 2013, I'm telling you, there are all these Rask people waiting in the weeds, just waiting to jump out to say, I told you so. I told you so.
No, I mean, that's just the world that we live in, especially here. People have a very high standard, many of us very negative. But for me, I can tell you personally, it has been a perspective-changing performance thus far for Rask. And he's the least of my worries. And they're talking about the layoff. Like, I feel like it's almost wasted breath. Like, there's nothing you can do
about
it.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm not that worried about it. Like, I don't know. I can understand, you know, in their history when they've swept in the conference final. They've never ended up winning the Stanley Cup, which is unfortunate. But I don't know. Like, there's going to be a layoff regardless, too, for the Western Conference final. I want to see that series go as long as possible. I want double. I want triple overtimes. Beat the bag out of each other so that they're still feeling it. And when you mention guys like Chara, who Don Sweeney talked about today. And my understanding is, from a source, that that nagging injury, it rhymes with schmroin.
Oh, no. That's not good.
Yeah. Pretty reputable source. I'll just say that. So that being said.
Jim Murray, breaking news.
Guys
here.
Like that, they need rest. So I'm fine with it. And again, for the most part, to be concerned about it, to talk about it ad nauseum, I think is almost wasted breath. But we do have the schedule. In the event that you haven't heard, the NHL did announce a schedule for the Stanley Cup Final. It will begin on Memorial Day. Monday, May 27th, 8 p.m. at the Garden. Game 2 is going to be Wednesday at 8 p.m., and then Games 3 and 4 on the road, either in San Jose and St. Louis, the Saturday and the following Monday.
I know you're really hoping for San Jose.
I am not. Selfishly, my understanding is that they're going to be sending Felger and Maz, myself included, to these road games. I'm not big on a long flight, Chris, so selfishly, I am rooting for St. Louis.
Well, as a tall, I know that's tough.
I think that they have been the better story. I have some friends in St. Louis. Yeah. Great barbecue. St. Louis, I think, is underrated as far as like a crap city to go to. And those other guys are dreading it, so there'd be some spite involved, too. So I want St. Louis. I really do. And I think that they've been a good story.
They have been a very good. And they're a lot like the Bruins. Can I just say, I spoke to one unnamed Bruins beat writer today. He feels the polar opposite of you, is pulling extremely hard for San Jose, and said, I quote this, I hate going to St. Louis.
Yeah. I don't think really anybody. It's basically just me, I think, that wants St.
Louis. I did
Louis.
Not have a great time there in 2013 for the World Series. The ballpark was amazing.
Sure.
But that area, it was a little tough. There wasn't.
Oh, very
there was
sketchy.
Like, there was like a, I'm not even talking, I mean, it wasn't even like that. I'm saying there was like basically like a hollowed out mall. It was the saddest mall like I've ever seen. Like a downtown hollowed out mall. And like the only thing open was like the Sbarro. Like it was sad. It was like really sad. There was not a lot to do in that downtown area.
Come on, you go, you see the arch, you take a selfie by the arch, you get to point at the stadium where the Rams used to play and laugh. That's about it. I mean, there's really not a lot going on in St. Louis. I went there this past summer after like 2 days. It's like, all right, I've basically seen everything that there is to see. But still, I don't want to be on a flight for six hours. Do you have a preference, though, even just in terms of the hockey? Do you think that there's a better matchup of the Bruins
from
here?
From a hockey
do you think
standpoint,
it's the Blues?
I think it's the Blues. Similar teams, and I think the Bruins are – I think those teams are similar to me. They do a lot of the same things, but I think the Bruins are better and have more depth and more skill, you know, with the perfection line and all that. And San Jose just scares me. They are a chronically underachieving team, and they've been that for years and years and years, and some of the names change. Obviously, Patrick Marleau's not there anymore, but it's still, they just seem to underachieve. But they scare me with all that offensive skill that they have. Like, did you see, even the end of the game last night, like in the third period when they're getting power plays or when they pull Jones, just the amount of skill on the ice, it's like Burns to Carlson to Couture, like here's Thornton. The amount of skill on the ice is just absurd. And it just kind of scares me a little bit. I'd rather go against the less skilled team that sort of plays the way that you play than the more skilled team.
And that's the way I look at it. And I know, you know, I've heard DJ Bean on NBC Sports Boston talk about it too. Like that, he thinks the Blues would actually be problematic because of the way that Bennington has played, their goalie. And because the styles are so similar, you're going to be talking about 2-1, 3-2 type games. And obviously those can kind of go either way.
One bounce.
And the Sharks, you know, the Bruins had two really competitive games against them. The last one that was here was a bloodbath. You got Chara tuning up Evander Kane at the end of that one. You know,
I didn't even mention Kane. Yeah, they got a lot of skill.
But they do have a lot of skill. And Logan Couture, the way that he's played, you mentioned, look, they end up winning it. He's likely going to be a Conn Smythe, you know, finalist here and could win it.
So.
He terrifies me. So I just, you know, selfishly, I don't want to have to deal with that flight and their forwards, their scoring ability. It's big names all over the ice. They do.
And they also have a little bit of that, like, team of destiny thing with the calls.
Oh, God.
With the calls there. I mean, the call they got in Game 7 against Vegas, the call they got on Gabriel Landeskog, that just garbage offsides that had nothing to do with anything review in Game 7 against the Avalanche, the blatant hand pass.
Yeah,
in Game 3 for
Hold on
Timo Meier.
You mentioned this last week about how replay, there's nothing we can really do it at this point, but it really falls, these errors more fall on operators.
Stupid humans.
The operators.
Stupid human tricks.
And so you wrote about it this week, too, because I do want to revisit that, even though the Blues tied up that series 2-2 last night. What happened in that third game was criminal. It was absolutely criminal. We will get to that later this hour. And want to hear from you on the Bruins at 617-779-0985, specifically Tuukka Rask. You know, if they end up losing in the Stanley Cup Final, has your perspective changed on Rask? Because I know there's been a lot of doubters around here for quite some time on this particular player. 617-779-0985. It's Gasper and Murray here on 98.5 Sports Hub.
You're listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5 Sports Hub.
The Boston Bruins
are going to collect their seventh consecutive win. This is a black and gold freight train. Icing is waved off. Johansson back of the net. The last time they won this many playoff games in a row, you have to go back to 1972. And the horn sounds. Tuukka Rask closes out the series with another shutout. The Boston Bruins are headed to the Stanley Cup Final for the third time this decade. They sweep the Carolina Hurricanes in four straight. And for the first time since 1990, the Boston Bruins will start the Stanley Cup Final in Boston.
We've earned the right to be where we are and to go to the Stanley Cup Final. We've beaten three good teams. You know, there's some unfinished business, so that's part of the emotion that you want to keep in check. You want to enjoy it, but also understand that. And I think our guys understand that there's still four more steps to take.
Yeah, Bruins head coach Bruce Cassidy keeping it in perspective, as is every other Bruin, which I love hearing. Not that you really expect anything else, but they know there's still more work to be done here. Of course, Judd Sirok, the final call, along with Bob Beers of Game 4 as they complete the sweep of the Carolina Hurricanes on Thursday night. It's Gasper Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. I mentioned this yesterday to Open Felger and Maz. One of the things I really loved about Thursday night's game, you know, besides the fact that they thankfully swept and got that hideous team out of my face, the stupid Carolina Hurricanes, there was, if you saw this on, or maybe you didn't see this on Twitter, but maybe it was on Facebook, or you might have heard about it, because I thought this, the one of the great things that came out of Thursday night and this series, and the Bruins moving on to the Stanley Cup Finals, is the much-deserved, intensified collective anger towards the Boston Celtics for their failure of a season, because people are pissed that they're going to be robbed, potentially, of the Boston Slam. Yeah, all four can win a title in 1 year. Or at the very least, a deep run by the Celtics that everyone, including nationally, thought that they'd go on this year because they should have been playing last night. They should still be in this thing based on the talent. Personally, I found that their five-game gentleman sweep at the hand of the Bucks, Chris, was appropriate. That's what they deserved for what this season ended up turning out to be. But considering what the hype was, what the aspirations were for the Celtics heading into the season, I think you could make the argument that the Celtics actually had the best chance to win a title. That even includes the Red Sox when you factor in their failures prior to last October. Around September, when you took all four teams, I think the Celtics, on paper, were the team that you could look at as a Boston sports fan and say, oh, yeah, no, they're the team that's actually going to win a title.
Well, so, I mean, they had to get past Golden State, but you looked at it and said, yeah, this. I think you certainly thought they had a better chance than the Bruins, right?
Definitely.
I mean, there's no question about that. And you look at it, and it does. The Bruins' success absolutely does further highlight the Celtics' failures. You know, for me, I look at it, though, and I sort of say, like, a lot of this, and look, this is what we do at Sports Talk Radio, and we're sports fans in general. It's a lot of it is hindsight, though. Like, for example, the team struggled all year long. They won 49 games. Like, who was starting the NBA playoffs thinking, like, this team should win the championship?
I think that you still had that certain segment of people, especially after they swept the Pacers, like, oh, they flipped the switch. Because they talked a lot, obviously.
Sure.
A lot of talking, not a lot of winning. So yeah. I can understand why a segment of Celtics fans could look at that and say, like, oh, what? Hell, even after the first game against Milwaukee, while I still thought that they were, you know, kind of a bunch of frauds, and it was all talk and nothing else and not a lot of substance. After that, I was like, well, I wave the white flag. Here, I'm going to get, you know what it was? It was PTSD from what the Patriots did postseason.
Yeah.
That's totally what it was.
It was. Yeah, you're right.
The blood. Like, it was going to come again. But boy, was I wrong. Like, I had a shame on me. I'm literally... like filled with the guilt and shame of buying in.
The shame
that
I feel
game.
After I watch Paradise Hotel. Yes. Same feeling.
Yes, Chris.
You just hate yourself. Why did I? I'll never get those hours of my life
That's
back.
How I feel when I watch 90 Day Fiance on a Sunday night on occasion. I don't know why I do it, but I do. But yes, that's how I felt. And because I knew the bigger sample size that they were complete frauds, and all the infighting is what really pulled this team apart this year, which is really the most ridiculous and frustrating thing. And I think that's why you saw a lot of that anger and heard about it from phone calls in the midday show yesterday and on Twitter and Facebook, because people were like, they had the talent to do it. They should have done it, or at least gone on a deep run. And the reason they didn't is because they're all a bunch of bitches. That's really all it came down to.
Yeah, I mean, they never established any chemistry, and I think there were too many individual agendas there. There's no question about it. There's a lot. You know, look, what did we say last week? And, you know, you sort of coined this, even though I wrote it. I did a bad job. The story of the 2018-19 Celtics. Yeah. That's what it is. From top to bottom, there's no question about that, and the Bruins thing highlights it. But I do have to say, I do think, and this is why people don't like us, and they don't like Boston sports fans to some degree and find us annoying, because it is revisionist history to be like, at the start of the playoffs, I'm sorry, there were not a lot of people thinking, like, we're going to get the slam. This 49-win Celtics team definitely is going to win the championship. That's not the case. I think there's a lot of people now that are sort of going back and saying, like, oh, we could have had the slam. It's like, you already knew you weren't getting the slam by the time the NBA playoffs rolled around, if you'd watched the Celtics.
Well, if nothing else, how about a little bit more of a competitive series in that second
round? No, and that's, fine. That's, like that. No, that's totally fair. But again, we talked about this too. That to me, was the perfect ending for that team. It typified the Celtics. They were a front-running team. They had won their first five playoff games. They lost one playoff game. It was a four-game losing streak that took them right out of the playoffs. Win your first five, lose your next four. That, to me, typified their entire season.
And then you have the other thing, too, is the juxtaposition and the optics of Zdeno Chara at the end of game four, who's out with, you know, you hear like a nagging injury, but he'll be ready to go for game one. But he's there. He's suited up. He's immediately in the handshake line. And so he's there in a game he didn't even play in, compared to Kyrie Irving, who really couldn't even be bothered to show up for Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals last year, because as we kind of find out, it has to do with the fact that he was maybe a little bit butthurt they got that far without him, and he had to get the nose job so he could actually breathe correctly and be, you know, looking all good to do his press, you know,
his press junket for
his stupid movie.
Yeah.
Like that, I don't know how you can't look at that and think, like, man, these are two completely polar opposites here in terms of the guys that are leaders of their teams and just the attitudes of both teams. Like, it's, that's where I can understand the frustration and anger. Not so much about the Boston Slam, but just that they're the most, that Celtics team this year is one of the most un-Boston things that you could see in terms of attitude and how they carry themselves and the infighting and all of that stuff.
No, it's true. I mean, we've seen in the past from certain Red Sox teams.
Oh, for sure.
Comes to mind. But you're right. And when you look at it, there's nothing more frustrating in life, I think, for all of us, when you look at somebody or something that has tremendous talent and it's just wasted. Like, wasted talent is so frustrating. And that's what the Celtics were. So, you know, the subheading of that would be, you know, I did a bad job. The story of the 2018-19 Celtics, you know, wasted talent. Like, that's sort of what it is. And so people get so angry, rightfully so, and frustrated with wasted talent. And you see a Bruins team that obviously has maximized its talent. And you see a Celtics team that squandered its talent.
It's like the line from Sonny in A Bronx Tale, right?
That's right.
Which, ironically enough, who he's telling it to, C. Colosio, that kid who plays that actor, he ends up, there's a pretty decent documentary about him. That dude ended up becoming, like, unfortunately, a massive drug addict.
The guy in the movie.
Shattered his career. Yeah, the kid, Colosio, he grew up to become, like, a really bad addict, breaking in and out of homes, ended up in prison. Like, it's ironic that it's Sonny saying that to C, and the kid who plays C ends up wasting his talent.
You know? Oh, wow, yeah, that's sad.
Check it out sometime. Frank the Tank, you're first up here on Gaspar Murray this morning. Hey, Frank.
Hey, guys. That was actually De Niro who said that to him. There's nothing worse than wasted talent. It was the dad
who
said it to him, yeah.
All right, so it's been ages since I've seen that. Thank you for correcting me.
Yeah, Sonny said, ask Mickey Mantle if he'll pay your dad's mortgage.
Right.
But anyway, we're getting off topic. But look, before I get to the Sharks or the Blues, real quick here, there's three guys that I think deserve a piece of the Conn Smythe trophy if the Bruins win. I understand that it's probably going to be Rask if they win. But first, Don Sweeney, as much as it pains me to admit it, because I can't even stand looking at the dude. I never could. Bruce Cassidy and Jaro Halak. Those three guys, I think, this year pushed Tuukka Rask to become a much better goalie. Granted, the rest did help, yes, but I think the mental game that Cassidy played with Rask all season long and the push that he got from Halak has made him a better goalie this year. It really is refreshing to see. As far as the teams that weighed out in the West, you know, I really don't care at this point who we play. I really don't fear anyone. Each team brings their challenges. If I had my choice, I'd like to see St. Louis just because I love that uniform. I've always loved that uniform, and I'd rather look at that than
Frank,
than Jumbo Joe and his homeless beard.
I'm glad you just said that, because one of the other things, too, because I was almost afraid to say it because people are going to be like, you know how people get. But from an aesthetic standpoint, oh, it's a much better-looking series. Those Blues uniforms are fantastic.
Absolutely. I mean, and it's, you know, it kind of brings you back, you know, the Sharks, I mean, it's great, and I'm glad that California's got a team out there that the people really love. other than, you know, Carolina, which are frauds. Turn that pig into bacon, I say. You know, and but I would just rather see the Blues. It's a better hockey market. But anyway, look, I don't fear either team. It's going to be a difficult series either way. But I just hope that the Bruins, they use this rest, watch those teams play. And, I mean, when Memorial Day comes, let's get it on, baby. Go get the cup.
Thanks, Frank. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, too. So it was De Niro that said it. Man, it's been ages. I got to see that movie again. Now you can't.
I should have gotten that because I actually saw the play, like, in November in Los Angeles.
Wow. Fancy boys seeing the play. I don't need to see the movie. I saw the play. I read the book. All right, everybody. Okay, so we'll pause the conversation. We'll get back to your calls as it pertains to the Bruins. Who do you want to see them play? Blues, Sharks, do you have a preference? Your thoughts on Tuukka Rask, even if they lose this thing? Has he changed your perspective? Because he has for me. 617-779-0985. And I do want to revisit Game 3 in the Western Conference Finals, where you saw one of the most hideous calls in the history of sports that, of course, went the Sharks' way because they seemingly have a horseshoe crammed right up their keister. I know you have some strong thoughts on replay.
Oh, I do.
How it's incorrectly used by dumb humans, Chris.
I definitely do. Let me just, I'm just thumbing through this playbill over here, so just give me some time.
We'll get to that right after the Sports Hub headlines here with Sean Silver, Gasper Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub.
This is Gasper and Murray.
You will listen.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
In front of the net, the Nyquist, and they've scored. Carlson on the doorstep puts it in, and the San Jose Sharks win in overtime. 5-4 with 14:37 to go in overtime.
Might be a hand pass here, Curbs.
Yeah, but if they didn't see it, they can't review it.
They're going to talk it over. I did see a hand drop. Jordan Bennington's aggravated. Is that a reviewable play?
Nope.
Timo, it's a hand pass, 100%.
They're going to call it a goal, and the Blues just got toasted. A hand pass by San Jose, missed by Mark Jonette, Dan O'Rourke, Johnny Murray, and Matt McPherson. These two guys, they pointed to center ice, and now they don't know what to say. And they're going to call it a goal, and the Blues just fell victim to another horrific job by NHL officiating.
And there's been a lot of it that has specifically benefited that team, the San Jose Sharks, who the Bruins could see in the Stanley Cup Final. Gasper Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub. Now we're going back a game because it might be almost a little bit moot at this point as that series is now tied 2-2. Jordan Bennington making 29 saves for St. Louis last night as they tie it in St. Louis. So again, tied 2-2.
Yeah, but they held on for dear life in that game.
Yeah. Oh my God. Some of those forwards of San Jose are absolutely frightening. That being said, that's going back to Game 3 in overtime, where, if you weren't watching, I'll just break it down for you. In overtime, the Sharks were benefited again by the officials, where they missed, and I'm using air quotes, a blatant hand pass that set up the game-winning goal in overtime for a fake win for the Cockroach Asterisk Sharks. That's how I'm going to refer to them as until the Stanley Cup Final is wrapped up, hopefully with the Bruins hoisting the Stanley Cup. They have benefited now in three straight series. But this specifically, this is what you talked about a little bit last week on this show. You ended up writing about it in the Globe. It's replays here. We've walked too far through that door, right? It's not going to go backwards. None of these professional sports are going to get rid of it. The operator error, the refs, they're the ones that are at fault here. They're the problem. And just the attitude, too. So, for those who are not watching, like, it's blatant. They missed it. Everybody in the arena saw it. It was a hand pass. The whistle should have been blown. And at the very least, it should be reviewable, but it's not because of the stupid rules in the NHL that need to change. And now, I think the solution is, even if it slows things down, unfortunately, they have to review every goal in the NHL. They absolutely have to. But the attitude of the refs, and one of them shooed. He did, like, the old lady, like, shoo, get off my lawn type motion to one of the Blues players, which put me into a blind rage. I literally had a hard time going to sleep that night. This type of stuff makes me so incensed, Chris, because it just, you see it time and time again, specifically during this playoff run for the Sharks.
Yeah, I agree. And here's the thing. Again, we have the technology to get that call right. It should be a pretty easy fix by Toronto, but you know, the NHL and the NHL general managers have decided, like, that play is not reviewable. And so that's the problem. Like, I don't, you know, people say replay's ruining sports. No, human beings are ruining sports with the way that they use replay, or in this case, do not use it. So when you look at all the sports, and I think the NHL has had a number of notable incidents, I think, this postseason, including one involving the Bruins, that game against Columbus, that completely bogus goal by Artemi Panarin after the puck was out of play and it hit the netting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things that they can fix, and they've just chosen not to fix. And then I think on the other side, you have some other leagues, maybe I would say the NFL, the NBA, reviewing every foul that's even, you know, remotely involves physical contact to see if it's a flagrant. What's going to happen in the NFL with pass interference where they're going too far? MLB, where you slide into second base and your finger comes off for a millisecond, and you know, some guy's holding the tag, you know, longer than Avengers Endgame, and you get the out. I mean, I hate that. That drives me nuts. The worst play in sports, that play at second base. So the technology's there. It's good. It's not the technology's fault. It's our fault. We don't know how to use it. And it's like anything. Like as I said in the column, I mean, it's the reason you don't like going on Twitter. You know, is that Twitter's fault? Is it the technology, or is it wretched human beings, you know, pirating that technology for bad? I would say it's the latter. It's the same with this.
One of the greatest pieces of advice I ever got from an old coworker friend of mine, Kevin Mulhern, at the now defunct WFNX. I was just a young pup, wet behind the ears as an intern trying to make my way into the radio business. He goes, "Jim, never forget one thing. Other people ruin everything." And it's true. It gets more true by the day, and it certainly applies here with replay in sports. But that is absurd. And I honestly, Chris, like, I would like to see this change between these conference finals and the Stanley Cup final, yeah. Like, and it's not going to, but I just, with the way that things have benefited the Sharks, especially if the Sharks move on, they have a horseshoe stuck right up their collective shark asses. Like, it kind of terrifies me here that one of these, or two of these other calls,
those big hockey butts,
yeah, could still go their way in the finals. Like, it's been, there's something going on with that team that,
well, you know, they're trying to get Jumbo Joe his Stanley Cup, and I'm sure if he wins it, he'll come back to Boston and go to City Hall, and we'll all celebrate.
Yeah. Let's go to Chris in Worcester as we're talking bees here this morning on Casper Murray. Hello, Chris.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good. What's up?
Awesome. I was just wondering, Murray, if you have an asterisk on this playoff run, because, you know, they didn't have to face Tampa, and they didn't have to face Washington. What's your feeling on that, guys?
Chris, thanks for the call. I do not, only because, and that's, I swear, no Bruins bias here. The one great thing about the NHL playoffs, and it's one of the reasons I love it, you know, behind the NFL playoffs, is the unpredictability of the whole thing. Sometimes you see these upsets more often than not. So, no asterisk because of that. And I am the one that doles out the asterisks, by the way. So, no. And the other thing is, I don't know, even though the Tampa was a freight train for most of the season, I think what we ultimately learned from their loss at the hands of the Columbus Blue Jackets is that they didn't really have to play any real competitive games for the last, like, month and a half of their season, and that's what caught up to them. And with Washington, look, I know what the history is, and they had that lone win in their first time in, like, 15 games against them on Super Bowl Sunday in a game that literally, like, nobody watched, and Holtby has been tremendous against them. Holtby was awful in that series against Carolina. Their scoring went sideways. Kuznetsov didn't even score until late in that series with Carolina. So they looked like their deep run last year and winning the cup and all of that nonstop drinking of the summer finally caught up with them too. So I'm not saying, like, look, maybe it would have played out differently, but I wasn't. It's easier for me to say now, but I don't know if I would have been as terrified of those teams with the way that they ended up looking in the postseason than I would have going into it, if that makes any sense.
It does make sense, but I knowing you, I think you would have been terrified of the Lightning, and I think a lot of people thought that was where the Bruins train stopped if they had to face Tampa Bay in the second round. You can look at it another way. You know, whether it deserves an asterisk or not, I would say, you know, no, because that's, they can't control that. But the other way I look at it is you better win the cup, because this is a great opportunity to do so, because you didn't have to beat Tampa or Washington or Pittsburgh. And I know Pittsburgh didn't have a great year this year, but still, it's Crosby, it's Malkin. You didn't have to beat that team. You didn't have to beat, you know, Calgary, the number one seed in the West, or a really good Nashville team, or Vegas, or Winnipeg. You know, the competition here was set up for you to succeed.
Howard and Randolph on the hand goal that benefited the Sharks in Game 3 of their series. Hey, Howard.
How you doing, guys?
Good.
I agree with you that San Jose has gotten the breaks, but let's be realistic, though. Against Golden Knights, they were down 3-0, got a five-minute major. How many teams give up four goals on a five-minute major? And the Knights tied it before the end of the period, and they lost in overtime. Same thing with St. Louis. I mean, they had the goal lead with about a minute to go. They gave up the tying goal. And even if they ruled that goal didn't count, who's to say the San Jose wouldn't have scored again in overtime?
No, it's fair, Howard. Yeah, and
that's true.
They shouldn't have you know, the thing that happened in that Vegas Golden Knights game is that, you know, it shouldn't have been a 5-minute major. It was a little slight push. The guy, because there
Joe Pavelski.
Yeah, yeah, because he ended up bleeding on the ice, the refs reacted to that when it should have just been a 2-minute at best. Like, yeah, they shouldn't have given up the 4 goals. They're complicit, but it was a bad call to begin with. I want to pause this. You want to continue to talk about the Bees, anything going forward here? It's a short show today as we have the Revs taking on the Montreal Impact at 1. You want to join us? 617-779-0985. Do have the Sports Hub Celtic show coming up in just about 10 minutes. But after this, though, Chris, I want to get your temperature on your baseball team, who lost a tough one last night to the Houston Astros, and some questioning after the game by manager Alex Cora and how he handled Rick Porcello, and who mostly had a good night until he didn't. So we'll get to that next here on Gasper and Murray.
This is Gasper and Murray on 98.5 Sports Hub.
And Springer, the batter, 0 for 2 with a walk. 16 home runs, 40 runs batted in for Springer. That's a high fly ball, center field deep. That's back all the way to the bullpen, and it is gone. Number 17 for Springer, a two-run shot. And in a blink of an eye, the Astros have the lead in the eighth inning.
That's the best lineup in baseball. He goes 7. Every pitch is high leverage. You know, he did his job. You know, the whole thing about one hitter, get him out, plus a point, you know. And we have the best player in baseball right now with a man in second and no outs. That's on me. That's not on Rick, so... I just made a bad decision, put him in a bad spot, and we pay the price.
It's on me. You know, he's got the confidence to leave me out there, and I got to do a better job of, I guess, rewarding that confidence. You know, it's 100% on me. The pitch count was intact. I was fine. I got to make a better pitch.
Gasper Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub, is our long commercial-free segment that will segue into the Sports Hub Celtics show. So the Sox opened up their series last night at home to the Houston Astros, 3-1, they end up losing. In a game that Rick Porcello was kind of nails in until he wasn't. I just want to get your temperature on this team overall, Chris. I thought this was, I don't know, I don't think this is like, you know, the most important series that they're going to face like going forward. But I think there is some level of importance here because it's a good litmus test compared to some of the teams that they have been facing as of late, where the Red Sox have turned their season around. And there's myriad reasons for that, including Michael Chavis, who I think has been the biggest factor in their turnaround as of late when it comes to the offense. But last night, you hear there, Rick Porcello and Alex Cora after the game. Game is scoreless. There's a lead finally in the seventh inning. 1-0 lead. Porcello comes back out for the seventh. And he's nails up to this point, gets into trouble, gives up a double, and ends up giving up that home run to George Springer, who's the hottest hitter in baseball right now, right?
Yes.
And so, I don't know, the second guessing from Cora after the game, like, I don't know. Like, even talking about this, I did a spot on BST last night on NBC Sports Boston. It's like, after my immediate reaction, it's like, okay, I can kind of understand it. But then again, how can you trust that bullpen? Like, you can, I thought it's an easy second guess after the fact for Cora to say, like, well, I screwed up. I should have pulled him. But should you have? Because you really can't trust anybody in that bullpen right now, as evidenced by Ryan Brazier when he came into the game.
Yeah, you know, it hurts him. Obviously, Brazier's sort of struggled here a little bit. I mean, you look at the bullpen. Sean and I were talking about this in the break. You know, it's Barnes, it's Brazier, it's Walden, it's Workman, and then Hembree sort of on the outside. And so if one of those guys suddenly doesn't have it, it's tough. I also think Alex Cora was thinking about the full 162 and the idea that today Hector Velasquez is on the mound for them. He's essentially an opener, you know, somewhere between an opener and a real starter. Like, they don't expect to get 7 innings out of him. They'll be happy with 4 innings. So he knows he's going to have to delve into the bullpen today. So that was part of it. And, you know, the reality is, I mean, I don't mean to be harsh about it, but, you know, and it's only one game, but you want that pitch is why Porcello is not getting a contract extension from them, because he's not a real ace. And because when you leave him in situations like he's a number three starter. And given the fact that he is a number three starter, a very good one, but in the numbers against George Springer, which I didn't know this, going to that game last night, George Springer lifetime against Rick Porcello was 9-for-18 with 2 home runs going into the game.
Yeah, so I didn't know this either until we were just about to come back into this segment. So now, okay, knowing that, that's where you can second-guess Cora. And that being said, then he should have pulled him after the double. Like, that's where the second-guess is.
No, that's fair. I think that's fair. And I think that's probably where Cora's sort of second-guessing himself. But this just shows you, look, kudos to the Red Sox. They've dug themselves out of the hole. But this shows you it's still not 2018. And every once in a while, you still hear from them over there, like right when they got above 500, it's like, this shows us, you know, that we are the team we thought we were and that, you know, the stuff we did last year matters or the stuff we did last year still applies. No, it doesn't, because last year Cora would have left Porcello in and he would have gotten out of the inning. You know, everything Cora did last year, he had the Midas touch. It all turned to gold. This year, it's a little bit different. This is the real world now for the Red Sox.
Yeah, and if you're not paying attention, last night the Yankees and Rays. Rays are leading 3-1. There's a delay. Yankees come back, end up walking it off. You wake up this morning in New York, New York. The MASH unit that they are in first place in the American League.
By a half game.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I didn't see that coming the way that they were looking for a while. Overall, though, your temperature on the team, your biggest concern, is it the bullpen?
Yeah, I would say at this point it probably is the bullpen, just in terms of, again, with the downturn with Brazier, because he does lead them in saves. And so where are you going to go from there? They're carrying some guys in that bullpen, literally carrying them, you know, because they're useless. Colton Brewer is not a guy I have any confidence in. Same goes for Thornburg.
I mean, Walden looks like he'd be okay.
Walden's legit.
Yeah. But then again, I don't know. It's all of them. Even when times when Brazier's look good. Matt Barnes has been, you know, at least statistically, one of their better relievers right now.
Except for that Tampa series where he gave up the game-tying home run in back-to-back games in the eighth inning. I only know that because I covered that series. I was down there in St. Paul.
They're all inconsistent, Chris. Like, you can't really truly trust any of them. I don't know what the solution is. I don't think that it's so much on Alex Cora's plate. It's just a personnel thing more than anything else. It's going to need to be addressed, I think, by the time the trade deadline rolls around.
I agree with you, and I would throw one thing out there. And look, who knows? There might be a lot of relievers available at the trade deadline, or before that, there's a lot of bad teams in baseball. You just look at the standings. There's so many teams under 500. Even a team like the A's that has a great bullpen, they've underachieved so far this year. Maybe they would peel off a piece. But the other thing here could be maybe you go out and get some sort of just depth starter to throw into your rotation. And if you do that, then you can move Evaldi to the bullpen, which I've always thought would be where he's best. I mean, I know he was so great for them last year and lights out and all that other stuff, but I've always thought like that's where he would be best is as a killer, a guy, high leverage guy at the end of your bullpen.
617-779-0985, the phone number if you want to join us as we get into the Sports Hub Celtics show. If you had any leftover thoughts from the interview that Wick Grausbeck, owner of the Celtics, did with Phil Grammaz earlier this week, we're going to touch on that. Some of the comments made by Terry Rozier as he did the ESPN car wash earlier this week, and why I think that the NBA draft is 100% rigged. We'll get to all that coming up here in our final hour here this afternoon on 98.5 of Sports Hub.
This is Bob Soucy. The Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the Boston Marathon's Adaptive Program for Runners, creating opportunities for runners with autism and other disabilities to participate in the legendary Boston Marathon. As a runner myself representing the Flutie Foundation at the 2022 Boston Marathon, I'm proud to have been a teammate to many amazing Adaptive Program runners, achieving their dreams at the greatest race in the world. The Flutie Foundation promotes inclusion for all to help everyone achieve their running dreams in Boston and beyond. Visit FlutieFoundation.org to get involved.
The Sports Hub On Demand content is brought to you by Miller Lite. Tip off every Celtics game all season long with a great-tasting ice-cold Miller Lite, the original light beer. Miller Lite, official partner of the 17-time world champion Boston Celtics. When it's game time, it's Miller time, Celtics fans.
It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing. And FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, brand new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks. And all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. I don't know what you're waiting for. Go to FanDuel.com/Hardy. Make your first bet an automatic win with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.